Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Nervous Herbalist, a podcast for Chinese medicine practitioners who like herbs and want to learn more about their function, their history, and treatment strategies to use in the clinic. Let's get into it. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Nervous Herbalist. My name is Travis Kern, and I am here with...
Travis Cunningham.
And we are going to talk to you a little bit about constipation. Another favorite topic of folks out there in the world. And this one actually came to us from a listener. So Trish, if you're listening to this, thanks a lot for your email. We really appreciated it. And we wanted to take some time to talk about constipation from all of the various angles that we can.
Yes, indeed.
It's kind of a complicated topic.
It is. Yeah. It's actually pretty complicated.
Yeah. When we were prepping for this episode, we sort of sat down, we've got a bunch of whiteboards, and we just sort of worked through a bunch of logic propositions to make sure that we can organize the approach for you guys. And what we realized was that the differential gets pretty gnarly pretty quickly.
Yes.
But I think that we've been able to kind of simplify it and organize it in such a way that you guys will be able to take away some key elements. And then of course, you know, like everything we talk about, you can keep going deeper, right? I mean, there's really no end to any of these topics. But before we get into the specifics, I think it's important, T, why don't you talk a little bit about what constipation actually is and some important definitions that we often see get confused, both with patients and sometimes even with providers.
Yeah. So one of the first things we want to make sure we understand is that the patient's definition of constipation may not be our own or correct from a medical point of view. So a lot of people will say, for example, I feel constipated. But then when you ask them how frequently they're having bowel movements, they'll say, well, multiple times a day.
Right.
Which is not constipation. That isn't what the term constipation means medically. So a medically defined constipation is a lack of frequency with the movement of the bowels.
Yeah. So like you're skipping a bowel movement.
You're skipping a day at least.
Or more.
Yeah. Or more. And then the next thing we want to find out is when the bowel comes, is the bowel more wet or more dry? That's really important to know because everything else hinges upon that basic set of information.
Right. So the confusion that we often see is that when the patient says, I've been feeling constipated or I am constipated, but they're having multiple bowel movements a day.
Right.
They're usually conflating the quality of the stool with constipation. So they're having a hard stool.
Yep.
They're saying I'm constipated.
Yeah. Or difficulty with it feeling complete is the other thing that people are like, oh, you know, I had a, I just doesn't feel like I can get it all out or.
Right.
I want to go more, but I can't, which is also not constipation technically.
Yeah.
It's still good information for us to know, and we can help people with that, but it's not technically constipation.
Right. And I mean, it's not like you don't need to like educate or correct your patients necessarily.
No.
in the treatment room and be like, actually, that's not constipation. But it's important for you to know because if you're just dealing, and I'm, you know, not just, but if you're dealing with two or three bowel movements a day that are sluggish to start, take a while to move, and are kind of hard and dry.
Yeah.
For sure, there's going to be some crossover in the types of formulas we're going to talk about today, but that's probably a different line of logic than the stuff we're talking about today. In this case, we're specifically mentioning that people are skipping at least one day of bowel movements. A lot of times, though, by the time you're treating someone for constipation, they're skipping multiple days.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen people go 4 or 5 days without a bowel movement.
I saw a patient, I think the first year we were in practice, who had like one bowel movement every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of remarkable because this is one of the earliest things that you learn, right? About not asking people, so how are your bowel movements? Right.
A
just open-ended question because people will just say, oh, they're fine.
Yeah.
Or they're normal. And that's because this person has skipped like 5 days of bowel movements for their whole life, right?
Yeah, nobody talks about it in our culture.
Right.
So nobody knows what normal actually is.
Yeah, I literally had a patient earlier this year who, for, you know, she's in her 80s, And for all of her life, she's had a bowel movement once every 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
And she's been told by many practitioners that that's too infrequent, you know, but she's in good health, relatively speaking. She's in her 80s. She's like, you know, honestly, I can't even imagine what it would be like to go to the bathroom every day, to have a bowel movement every day. She's like shocked by it.
Right.
But we know that there's an imbalance there.
Yeah.
Okay. So the differentiator, once we've clearly established that we're dealing with actual constipation, the next major question that we've got to address that you mentioned was, when the bowel movement comes, is it wet? Is it dry?
Yeah.
Or is it some combination of the two?
Correct.
All right. So when we say it's wet, what are we talking about?
Meaning that when it comes, so let's say we're skipping days, but when the bowel comes, it's sticky, wet, maybe even diarrhea. Some people will literally have diarrhea when it comes, but then they won't go every day. Like it'll be every 2 or 3 days, and then it'll be like loose, or it'll be wetter or something like that.
Unformed.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then on the dry symptoms, these are, I think, the ones that most people are familiar with.
Right.
So the stool is hard and dry.
Yes.
Pellet-like, maybe.
Pellet-like, yeah. Yeah,
it's not a consistently smooth.
And typically difficult to pass.
Right.
Like very hard to get out.
Can be painful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the mixed one, which maybe surprises some listeners to hear. So the mixed one is what?
The mixed one is typically a hard plug. So the same bowel movement, hard plug. And then the next part of the movement, which is again in the same movement, is softer, wetter, possibly even loose.
Right.
So in the very same movement, you have both hard and potentially loose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that can also be really disconcerting to some patients if they've never experienced that before.
Yeah.
Because they're like, what is going on here? Like,
right.
It's like a very hard, difficult to pass initial bowel movement. They think they're going to have a hard, dry stool.
Yep.
And then that hard piece passes and then it's just watery and loose on the back end.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So let's take these one at a time then and kind of look at the thought process for each one. So let's start with wet constipation.
Yep.
So this is the bowel movement that's, you know, again, we're skipping a day or two or more.
Yep.
And then when it comes, this unformed, loose, watery, could even be diarrhea.
Yep.
Just the fact that we're having this kind of wet type stool, what is that cluing in for you? Like, what are you thinking?
So there's some kind of fluid mismanagement that's taking place in the GI that's impeding the dampness or the water is impeding the motility of the stool. It's lagging it behind. So the dampness or the water, depending on which of the patterns it is the thing that's obstructing the motility.
Right. And the motility here, I mean, this is, I guess, more academic than anything, right? But the motility is what we call motility from a biomed point of view is essentially like the qi aspect of peristalsis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the qi is that's driving the movement of the stool through your digestive tract is being obstructed by an accumulation of water and or dampness.
Correct.
Okay. And as a byproduct of that, the stool itself isn't becoming hard and dry, as we'll talk about in a minute, because there's all of this excess water and dampness in the actual intestines.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, you know, this is in contrast to someone who, say, has 8 bowel movements a day.
Right.
And they're super watery and wet. In that case, we still have an abundance of dampness, wetness inside the stool itself, in the colon. But there isn't the same kind of obstruction to the peristaltic qi that's moving stuff along.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So the patient then, we've established that it's wet. We've established that it's constipation. We know, because we've talked on this show before, I think most listeners will know that, you know, we tend to use abdomens as the next piece, right? We get
right.
the details and we're like, okay, pulse abdomen, and I use a lot of tongue.
Yep.
What's happening here, right? And so if you go to the abdomen and you do the classic exam, you might find yourself finding symptoms in the upper portion of the abdomen, above umbilicus.
Yep.
It's going to give us exterior indications
yep.
versus below umbilicus, interior implications. Talk a little bit about, I mean, we're going to spend most of the time in the show talking about the interior implications, but maybe touch on when we say there's an exterior component to constipation, what are we talking about here?
Exterior component to constipation is referring to how the physiology on the surface of the body is connected to the organs, basically. So part of what the exterior has to do is open and close efficiently. We have to do that in order to stay in contact with the chi of the external world, which is essential for life, according to the Chinese medicine view. So if we have too much of any one of the six chi, heat, cold, damp, dry, whatever, we'll die. If we can't adapt to that, we die.
Yeah.
So the exterior is the portion of our body that has to remain in contact with that changing dynamic of chi and whatever that chi is, one of the six chi. And so it's very important that strategically the pores of the skin can open and close. If they can't open and close, or they're having trouble opening and closing, a bunch of things can occur as a result of that. One of which is descent on the interior has a difficult time because pressure can't diffuse effectively on the surface.
Right. We had a teacher in school actually use this idea of opening the surface in a different context. He was talking about some lung conditions, but he had this image of a teapot.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And so if you're anybody out there drinks tea or has seen a teapot, you will notice that a modern teapot, like a nice little Kung Fu teapot, in the lid, there's a hole.
Yes.
In the center, usually like in the little lifty part of the lid, there's a hole that goes all the way through. And the reason that there's a hole there is because if there weren't a hole and the lid just made a nice tight seal on the pot and you went to pour the tea wouldn't come out.
Right.
Yep. And you'd be thinking to yourself like, well, why won't the tea come out? I'm pouring it.
Right.
And it's because there's a vacuum
that's
being made by the liquid, the heat, and the pressure of the room.
Yep.
And so in order to get the tea to flow, if you had a pot that didn't have a lid or didn't have a hole in the lid, you'd have to pop the lid. You'd have to make a little crack. As soon as you do that, there it goes. It just pours. So the modern teapots have this little hole in it. And in fact, as you well know, as a person who drinks a lot of tea, you can sort of control the flow of the tea by putting your finger over the hole.
You can.
Right? Yep. So like if you're like, oh, I need to stop for a second so it doesn't drip, you can just literally put your finger over the hole and it'll stop the flow.
Yep.
So this is a simple little analogy that touches to the same idea here with your body. So if the pores are snapped shut or they can't open and close correctly, then for lack of a better term and sticking inside of this metaphor, you're essentially creating a kind of vacuum.
Correct.
Internally.
Yep.
So that the bowels can't release because the surface can't release.
Right.
Right. There's almost like it's not to suggest that like your colon and your pores are a single flow through loop, but from a chi point of view, they are.
They have a relationship.
Yeah.
And it can also be urination can be involved in this.
Right.
Defecation and menstruation.
Yeah. So any of the downward flows.
Any of the downward flows. And often if one of them is affected by the surface, the other ones will also be affected to a greater or lesser degree.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind that if there is a surface superficial obstruction or an inability for the physiology to open and close correctly on the surface, it will often not just be defecation that's affected. It'll often be also urination, maybe menstruation if it's a female-bodied person.
Right. That makes sense. So we mentioned this just to kind of put a placeholder in your thinking about, as we talk about the interior presentations, if you're like, I don't know, there seems like there's something else here and I'm using these abdomens and I keep finding a lot of exterior sort of upper abdomen, superior abdomen findings, is like, okay, then maybe you need to be looking at, frankly, modifications on the formulas that we use for exterior conditions all the time, right? So that's going to be Shaoqiaotang, that's going to be Weijiaotang, something like that.
Exactly.
But for now, let's stick on the interior side. And the reason we're doing that is because a lot of times constipation is chronic.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes constitutional.
Yep.
And so those presentations are more likely, much more likely to be interior than exterior.
And if there is an exterior component, let's say, we'll often treat that first. It clears relatively quickly. And if there's an interior component, then they may still have constipation, but it gets a little better after we help to regulate the surface.
Yeah.
And then the pattern starts to move interior. So the pulses will start to track deeper. The qualities that we're finding on the abdomen will move away from being significant on the upper portion of the abdomen by the epigastric and rib side. and they'll start to only really be significant findings closer to the umbilicus, below the umbilicus, things like that. So the body will tell you where to treat mm-hmm. and what order to treat in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is sort of classic, like harmonize the patient first and then
right.
move into the interior.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So if we're still in the wet constipation category and
yeah.
we're thinking about interior presentation, we've assessed the abdomen and we've found some significant signs that start to help us understand what's going on here that says this is interior. What are some of those signs we might find on the abdomen?
Yeah, so we'll find maybe a lack of the first things that we talked about, right? The epigastric or the costal findings. Those will be less significant. We might find a little bit of rectus abdominal tension. That's possible in interior or exterior patterns.
Mm-hmm.
We might find a little bit, like if we track the Renn line closer to the umbilicus, we might find a little hard spot
mm-hmm.
in an interior pattern. That's possible. But it's usually less, it's usually more, let's say closer to the umbilicus. In my clinical practice, I find it in these patterns closer to the umbilicus as opposed to closer to the ribs.
Right.
If it's an interior pattern.
Yeah. We're going deeper.
We're going deeper. Yeah.
Okay. So then you feel into the zone, and then some of the things that are commonly found in this wet constipation presentation that can help confirm your suspicion, right?
Yeah.
Is like the abdomen will literally be cold.
It'll be, yeah, the skin will be cooler.
Yeah, yep. The actual skin itself,
yep.
Right? There can often be some water sounds.
Yes, with either elicited by the bloop, 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 like the tapping that you do on right. the stomach, basically. Yep.
Okay.
Or it could just be that you hear it when you're palpating or when you're doing acupuncture later. Mm-hmm. All of that counts mm-hmm. as water signs.
Yeah, so that's like gurgling, bubbling sounds.
Yep.
Okay. And then also when you're feeling the texture of the abdomen, the actual musculature below umbilicus,
yeah.
right? It tends to be softer.
Softer, yep.
Yeah. And so lax. All of this is indicating that there's water/dampness
yeah.
that's accumulating in the interior.
Yeah, and the tendency for more cold, like the tiring out of the yang system and the movement toward interior and cold.
Got it.
Yep.
So when we think about formulas for interior and cold, the ones that come up to the top of the list are Li Zhongguan
yep.
and Zhen Wu Tang.
Yep.
So again, if we're thinking wet constipation, interior with these cold and or wet presentations,
yep.
we're thinking Li Zhongguan or Zhen Wu Tang.
Yep.
So what's the differentiator? What's going to make us pick Li Zhongguan, for example?
So Li Zhongguan, again, would be... So one of the first things that cues that I want to use for wet constipation is the bitter warmth of an herb like baijiu, right? Versus the bitter cold of an herb like zhishi for like, let's say a drier pattern or mm-hmm. something. So both of these formulas have baijiu in them, Li Zhongguan or Ren Shentong, which is another name for the same formula in decoction, and Zhen Wu Tang. They both have baijiu in them. They both have ginger in them too. So there's a pungent, warm situation taking place. So we're moving toward warming and warming earth in both cases.
Mm-hmm.
But the big difference between Li Zhongguan and Zhen Wu Tang is the difference between cold dampness and cold water.
Okay. Cold dampness versus cold water.
Yeah.
Now, I think for some people who aren't, you know, used to thinking about it in those terms, those sound very similar.
Very similar, yeah. I don't remember learning the difference in school, honestly, myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was all just in a single lump, right?
Right.
Like people who tend toward yang deficiency, therefore cold, tend to accumulate water, phlegm, fluid, dampness.
Right.
Like it just sort of like all...
runs together.
Yeah, all in one thing. But this is why it matters now to talk about it, because it helps you pick the right formula. It
does.
Yeah. Okay, so if you're on... let's start with the water side of it, because I think on some level, at least to me clinically, it feels not exactly like a progression, but kind of like mm-hmm. it's sort of like the watery part
mm-hmm.
is different in kind really than dampness. Dampness
it
has
is.
A different quality to it. So what do we see on the water symptom side?
Water is going to be less influenced by yang. So that's the biggest difference. Damp is going to be more influenced, or like Arnaud Versluis likes to say, ripened by yang.
So like thickened.
Yeah. And made a little bit turbid.
Yeah.
Like damp is a little sticky, a little turbid. Water is not. It's just kind of unchecked in a way by yang, especially in yang deficiency, which is what we're talking about here in both cases. There's a version of yang deficiency in both of these patterns. But water, water symptoms have to do with the movement of water in the body, like, let's say, urination. So urination is not a symptom, difficult urination is not a symptom of Li Zhongwan, but it is of Zhen Wutang. Dizziness is also a symptom of Zhen Wutang. So this is also a water type pattern, or a water type symptom.
Okay. So dizziness, difficult urination, these are all indicators that there's, like, again, a non-turbid, non-sticky water imbalance.
Yep.
Okay. On the other side, though, on the damp, cold side.
Yeah.
Where there's more influence from a kind of pernicious xie qi style yang.
Yeah.
Right. The water has now gotten sticky.
Mm-hmm.
It's heavy.
Yeah.
And it has this kind of weightiness to it that then indicates we need Li Zhongwan.
Yeah.
Right. So also too, isn't there a different quality to the stool? Like even the smell?
Yes. Very good. Yeah, that's a good point. So watery diarrhea is going to be more Zhen Wutang.
Yeah.
Loose stool diarrhea, that's stinky, smelly, sticky, that's more Li Zhongwan.
Right. Right.
So again, damp versus water. Like the water's just flushing through the intestines. That's Zhen Wutang. The damp is getting transformed a little bit, but not enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be cold damp. That's Li Zhongwan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is a really, the smell piece is actually a really useful indicator, because I know, you know, if you just ask a patient, like, so is the stool smelly? Like,
right.
They'll be like, it smells like poop. Like,
right.
They're just, it's,
sure.
You have to figure out how to craft that question. And I actually, I usually use the phrase, like, is there any particularly strong odor?
Yeah. That's a good way to ask that question.
Particularly strong odor.
Yep.
And the reason is because, like, everyone also knows that not all poops smell the same.
Right.
Right. Like, yes, it was a bowel movement for sure. It's not a pleasant smell. Although there are even some watery diarrheas that have almost no smell.
Right. Right? Yeah, exactly.
And so like that's kind of like, you can kind of imagine the question of smelliness on both sides, right? It's like, yeah, literally I had like a kind of unpleasant watery release and it almost made no smell at all.
Right.
That is a strong indicator for the water damp side, or excuse me, the water cold side. Whereas if you've got still a pretty loose stool, but a stronger smell, right? Now we're looking at the damp cold side.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good differentiator. So wet constipation, interior, we're picking two formulas, Li Zhongwan versus Zhen Wutang, and we're differentiating those two primarily from, is it a damp cold or a water cold?
Yes.
Cold's, you know, pervasive in both of these.
Right.
And so the quality of the stool, it's stickier, it's smellier. There's a sense of heaviness to the patient.
Yeah,
there's a
kind muscle layer is heavy and like
it's that
weighty.
Damp blanket vibe, Li Zhongwan.
Yeah.
On the other side, we've got watery stool that has less smell, maybe no smell. And then there's other water symptoms. So there's difficult urination.
Yep.
So that's starting, stopping, frequency, urgency, anything.
Yep.
Right. And then dizziness.
Yep.
Which is that sort of water effusion that's like preventing the Shen from staying focused.
Yeah.
Right. And that's going to tell us Zhen Wutang.
Yeah, that's going to be more Zhen Wutang. And then the person is more tired in Zhen Wutang. They're more fatigued, right? That's the symptom of somnolence, or the desire to always want to sleep. That's a really key factor for Shaoyin disease, which would be cold water, versus Taiyin disease, which is cold damp.
Yeah, and that can be hard, I think, for some people to differentiate when you first ask patients about it, because patients don't really know. Like the quality of their tiredness.
Yeah.
It's like Li Zhongwan, people are also tired, but in a like worn out, weighty.
Yeah, think of Eeyore.
Yeah.
Eeyore for cold damp.
Yeah, there's like a heaviness to it, like a demotivation. Like I just can't. Whereas the Zhen Wutang people, like can just go to sleep.
Yeah.
Like it's not, it doesn't necessarily have the same kind of emotional
right
layer to it. It's just like, yeah, literally if you just put me on a couch, I would just fall asleep.
Yeah. Or they can't sleep is another version of it, but they really want to.
Yeah,
like,
that's the thing.
Oh my God, if I could just sleep,
right.
I would really be happy, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, next we're going to take a look at dry constipation.
Obviously, the primary differentiator just on the front is that the stool is hard and dry.
Yes.
Compared to the wet type constipation we were talking about. But as we mentioned, the constipation part, the infrequency of the stool,
right,
remains, you know, the thing that the patient is in for. But when the stool comes, it's now hard and dry.
Yes.
So when we were talking about wet constipation, we were talking about using herbs that are bitter and warm.
Yep.
So bitter to move downward, right?
Yep.
Drain downward and
yep.
warm, because the wet side of things is likely cold and wet, needs to be warmed.
Yep.
If we're on the dry side, though, we've got bitter again.
Yes.
Because we're still in the downward movement. But now we're talking cold.
Yes.
So bitter, cold herbs.
Yep.
What are the herbs that sort of mark that those qualities relative to constipation?
Yeah, the first two herbs I think of are gerscher and dawhwong.
Mm,
both
yeah.
bitter, both cold. And then maybe secondarily, baishao. And we'll maybe talk about that one a little bit later.
Got it. Okay, so gerscher and dawhwong. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people, if they're thinking back to school, they hear dawhwong and they're like, oh boy, gonna shit your pants with some dawhwong.
Yeah.
Right. It's funny because, you know, poor dawhwong.
Yeah.
It gets a lot of bad rep.
Yeah.
Because, it's purgative for sure. But like, I just feel like when we were in school, it made people sound like if you just had like 2 grams of dawhwong, you'd be like just strapped to the toilet for days.
Right.
But of course, that's not really the case.
No, and it really depends on the combination of
right.
herbs that it's with and the intention of the formula.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder if that bad reputation comes from dawhwong's primary association with da cheng chi tang.
Right.
And of course,
probably.
Yeah. So yep. da cheng chi tang here being like when you think back to school and you're like, what's the formula for dry constipation? You might recall
yes.
da cheng chi tang.
Yes.
Which has dawhwong and gerscher, the two herbs that you mentioned, but yep. significantly also contains mengshao.
Yes.
Why is that significant here, T?
Because mengshao is by far the most purgative herb you're going to add into a formula by itself. So mengshao is actually salty, not bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And salty in the sense that it's going to soften and descend, right? Soften hardness is the language of the Neijing,
mm-hmm.
right? And when you put that into a formula, like basically it's a mineral that's going to not be absorbed in your intestinal tract. So it's just going to flood. It's going to pull out all the water
yeah.
in your intestinal.
Into your intestines.
Into your intestines.
Yeah.
And then that is going to, hopefully, if there's a hardness, like a dryness that needs to be purged, right? The dryness that we're referring to is the condition of the stool that's stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So the salty flavor of mengshao is going to pull the water into the intestines, and then the bitter flavor is going to push everything down.
Right.
So the combination, it's very much like mahuang and guizhi both being needed to force a sweat. Whereas if you just use mahuang, but you don't have guizhi, maybe use like shergao, it's not going to cause somebody to sweat.
Right.
It's the same thing with dahuang and mengshao. If you just have dahuang, depending on the case, maybe it does cause some downbearing in the intestines,
right.
depending on the formula. But especially if you combine it with mengshao, it's going to be purgative.
Yeah, I mean, dahuang, big yellow, literally,
yeah.
dahuang. If you look at the root, it's a rhubarb root. It's important to remember. And it's huge. It's a huge root, and it's very bright yellow.
Yeah.
Right? And of course, we know that yellow herbs tend to be bitter.
Yep.
And we know the bitter flavor is downbearing, but also bitter clears heat. And so a lot of the power of dahuang in these formulas, but in many formulas where it shows up, is that there is some large intestine heat
yeah.
that needs to be cleared. And so, like, you know, we don't think about huangqin, for example, just having people riding the toilet for hours,
right?
Right? Even huanglian is super bitter and can definitely facilitate a bowel movement through its bitterness. again, doesn't have the same
right
reputation of like, oh God, explosive stools.
Yep.
It's really, it's poor Da Huang, it's really Meng Shao who did this.
Yeah.
It was like a hiding in the background, right, of Da Cheng Chi Tang. Yeah. Because it's the combination of the two together
yes
that creates this hyperpotency.
Yeah.
It's worth noting too that Da Huang, I mean, there are ways to make Da Huang more purgative, right? So if you mm-hmm. finely grind it and you short boil it in a mm-hmm. bulk decoction, you'll get more down-bearing sensation because it is more bitter in that context. If you long cook it, you'll get much less. Mm-hmm. If you use powdered Da Huang, like wine fried Da Huang or mm-hmm. chow Da Huang, like you'll have less, even less of the purgative quality, but about the same amount of the heat clearing quality.
Yeah.
And so again, like there's so much nuance that goes into a single herb, but I just felt the need to defend poor Da Huang its bad reputation as causing explosive diarrhea.
Yeah, absolutely. Which isn't
really fair. So, all right, we're talking here about Cheng Chi Tang's then primarily here in the Da Huang context, Da Cheng Chi Tang being that formula that people remember from school. But, you know, when I look at the kinds of formulas we write for this type of constipation, Cheng Chi Tang's not at the top of the list.
Right.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because in modern times, people have a lot of available purgatives, like at the drugstore or the grocery store even, mm-hmm. supplement. You know, department. So if they have really strong dry constipation, they're usually already self-treating in one way, shape, or form. I do know people that use Cheng Chi Tang's, especially Tao He Cheng Chi Tang, which is more of a blood level purgation kind of thing. But you know, I know people that use Cheng Chi Tang's a fair amount in their clinical practice. But those are people that are specializing in GI disorders, and it's still less often than most of these other formulas that we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So basically, if you were in a more classical context and you had someone who didn't have access to Miralax or smooth move tea or whatever over-the-counter, you know,
Senna.
Senna, yeah, exactly. Yep. So in the classical model, that means that someone maybe hasn't had a bowel movement in 4 or 5 days.
Right.
And they are feeling really bad.
Right.
And so they see the herbalist and they get written a Da Cheng Chi Tang.
Yep.
Now they're not written a Da Cheng Chi Tang for 7 days.
Right.
Right. That's the important thing to remember. This formula is the laxative equivalent, right? Yep. It's like, okay, open up the flow, get out what's there.
Yep.
But there's probably going to be a different formula that we use to deal with the actual underlying problem.
Yes.
Now, there are a lot of Cheng Chi Tang's. You mentioned Tao He Cheng Chi Tang, which is more blood-oriented. Da, as we mentioned, there's, of course, a Shao that goes along with it. We've got a Qiao Wei.
Yep.
There's a whole list. If you get into the Bensky, you can see the list. And there's small variations kind of across the board. Take out Jershir, take out Hopo, add this in, pull that out. The usual way that happens with families of formulas. But there is a formula that's based off of Shao Cheng Chi Tang.
Yeah.
That we do see people use, I think, more frequently for the underlying cause of constipation. Remind us about that one.
Yeah, Mazarinwan.
Mazarinwan, that's the right one. Yeah. And what about the design of that formula do you think makes it a more common starting point for the actual underlying mechanism of dry constipation?
Usually it's dry constipation that's been chronic. So there's more herbs in Mazarinwan, and the herbs that are used are sweeter. Whereas in Shao Cheng Chi Tang, it's pretty much all bitter, sour. You know, it's like, it's very, let's say, streamlined direction.
Yeah.
Very universal. Whereas with Mazarinwan, it's a little different than that. It's kind of slowed, the purgation has slowed down, if you will.
It doesn't push as hard.
It doesn't push as hard, exactly.
Yeah.
And the other key symptom for Mazarinwan is some kind of difficult urination. There's a strong urinary piece to the condition with that, which differentiates it, and which makes it a good formula for a lot of older people, usually.
Right.
That's kind of where we see it used a lot.
Yeah, because a lot of older people are going to have some kind of difficult urination, as you mentioned, which, by the way, is both ways, like infrequent or too frequent.
Yeah.
Though with older people, it tends to be more frequent.
Yeah, more urination. Frequent is more common.
So we see more frequent. We also see some incontinence issues.
Yeah.
In women, that can be accidents with urination, with movement or laughing, crying, coughing. With men, we usually see like difficulty starting and stopping, dribbling takes a long time to actually stop urinating. There's an ongoing kind of dribble that has a sort of incontinent quality. So like that stuff is, I think, a good indicator that Matsurin 1 is where you need to go. It's interesting, though, because even when we watch people get a lot of lift out of Matsurin 1, it doesn't seem to be the final formula, so to speak, for dry constipation. Instead, the formula tends to move really away from the Jershir Dahuang model into something that is a little bit more nourishing, moistening.
Yep.
And that's the Baisha that you mentioned.
Yeah.
What formula is the Baisha formula that kind of represents this treatment of dry constipation, but with Baisha as the leader?
Yeah, Shaoyo Gansotong, for sure.
Why that one?
Well, Shaoyo Gansotong is a two-herb formula, right? So it's just two herbs. It's very, potentially very strong in direction because there's fewer ingredients. So the fewer ingredients you have in a formula, the more streamlined your focus of direction is. So it's going to be very strong in what it's doing. Shaoyo Gansotong represents the Neijing's answer for tonifying yin, or transforming into yin would be maybe a better way of translating into English, which is sour and sweet. The combination of sour and sweet tonify yin or transform into yin. The combination of acrid and sweet tonify yang or transform into yang. So if somebody has dry constipation with muscle cramping as a big feature of the case, you could do Shaoyo Gansotong right away to treat the problem.
Just start with that.
Or what I see in a lot more of these chronic cases, let's say the person is addicted to laxatives, very difficult cases to fully get off of herbs or whatever, right? But let's say they're addicted to Senna-tea. They've been taking Senna-tea for the last decade to try to have a bowel movement. Really tough cases to work. But you might start off with something like a Mazurenwan or even a Da Cheng Chi Tong, moving into a formula that's a little bit more nuanced and sweet, but then trying to get them to end on a Shaoyo Gansotong. And if you have a very high dose of Baishao in Shaoyo Gansotong, I've seen up to 60 in bulk herb. So 60 Baishao to like 15 Jergansao or something like that. Very, very high. That's more purgative. So the more you, this is what I was taught, that Baishao at smaller doses is emphasizing the sour function. Mm-hmm. Baishao at large doses is more emphasizing the bitter flavor. Mm-hmm. So you can use it as a purgative action at high doses. But you can also use it as a formula that you end on, or you try to work the case to get to in the long term, because it's really tonifying at a more, like, say, nuanced or equal dosage. So the Baishao may be a little higher than Jergansao is common, but more like low grade and similar dosage is going to be more for nourishing the fluids, nourishing the muscle layer, softening the muscle layer, keeping the motility going in the intestines. And it's a really good place to try to end your treatment on. It's kind of like the last formula you might go to and when you're finishing one of those long cases.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. The idea of Baishao. So Baishao, of course, is the root of the tree peony. And if you look at the root itself, it's very fleshy.
Yes.
It's dense. It's fleshy. Like all roots, I guess, it's really wet when you pick it up. But that's not true. Some roots are kind of dry even when they're fresh. But like Baishao is really wet. And even once it's dried, it's not oily like Dangui is. But you look at it and it has a clear density to it.
Yes.
That I think is very evocative of its yin function.
Yep.
It's not riddled with holes. It's not powdery. It has a density to it. And it's interesting then that the idea of Baishao at a much higher dose, so let's say that like the 60 to 15, so 60 Baishao, 15 Gansao, honestly, irrespective of how much Gansao is in that mix, 60 grams of Baishao is going to move your bowels.
Yeah.
Because it's wet.
Yeah.
It's super wet.
Right.
You know, even in formulas, outside of the realm of constipation, we use Baishao in really common formulas all the time. Think about, just Guizhetang or Shaoyosan or something that's going to have those in there. The need to be mindful of how much Baishao you're giving to a person if they have loose stools,
right,
wet Right. Yeah, digestive stuff is an important question because Baisha will move things along.
Absolutely.
Particularly at that high dose, right? And so
yeah.
it's also interesting because if you just take a piece of Baisha, you know, we talk a lot on this podcast about the flavors of herbs. And some flavors are like really obvious, you know? Like if you make a tea of just Guaijiu, it's very clearly acrid, warm, and a little sweet.
Yep.
Like you just taste it and you're like, oh yeah, it's got a little spice from the cinnamon, but there's that sweetness underneath that we all know from like hot tamale candies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's warm.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to tell. If you make a tea of Baisha and you drink it at any dose, really, you're going to be hard pressed to taste the sour.
Yeah.
Like at least it doesn't taste like Shanzhiyu tastes or Weizi or something, right? You kind of have to like reach for it. And you have to really, I think, develop an awareness of sour that's a broader idea than like a warhead candy.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing with sweet. Like if you brew up just Gansao on its own, sweet, like it's not a pastry, you know what right. I mean? But it is sweet. But you have to sort of like train your palate to right. expand the notion of what sweet really is. With most fleshy herbs, I have found, if you put a lot of it into a tea, so like let's say you just took 60 grams of Baisha and you decocted it into 8 ounces of liquid, it's going to taste bitter.
Yeah.
And honestly, that is true of many, many plants in general. I mean, you could just take like drinking tea, like Camellia sinensis, and you take 60 grams of tea leaves and you brew them into one cup of tea. Even if you flash steeped it, bitter.
Yeah.
Very bitter.
Yep.
Because the potency, like when you take so much plant substance and you create a dense ball of it, then you end up with something that is going to taste bitter.
100%.
It's just sort of how it goes.
Yep. And with Baishao, the other thing that I would say that we know about because we own an herbal medicinary is the smell of it is actually a place where you get more sour.
Yes.
Than the taste, mm-hmm. right?
And actually that I think is fun for listeners to imagine because I think a lot of people just went, what does sour smell like?
Yeah.
Right? Because sour is like, what do you mean? And honestly, this is an audio format, so it's going to be a hard way for me to explain it to you. But the truth is that if I took a variety of very sour things, Shanzhiyu, Weizi is maybe a worse example because there's a peppery quality to the seed. But sure. Shanzhiyu in particular, I think is a good one. And if you smell just deeply dried Shanzhiyu, just, you know, a whole pound of it or 500 grams of it just out of the bag and really train your senses on what you're smelling, the first thing that will clock in your brain is the smell of a fruit, which is mostly actually a sweet smell.
Right.
Because it's the flesh of a fruit. But then when you smell more deeply, you can actually start to smell the sourness.
Yeah.
And I really, there's no better way to explain it except that like, you got to try it. You got to do it.
Yeah.
You stick your face in a bag full of something very sour and start to train your nose to recognize what your mouth can pick up. Because of course we know that like taste is mostly smell.
Yes.
But it's just, there are some tastes that we don't spend a lot of time calibrating around smell. So it's a fun exercise. If you have access to some bulk herbs, I think it would be worth taking a look at. Okay, so Shao Gansao Tang, I'm glad you mentioned also the muscle spasm and the muscle tension, because I think a lot of people will recall that formula for that function.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a hypertonicity of the muscles, the tendency toward Charlie horse, you know, muscle contraction. And so in this case, we may actually see that in dry constipation people, their yin is weak.
Yes.
Right? And so their muscle, their flesh tends to be dry, tends to stick to itself, tends to seize, right? It's interesting too that biomedically, you'll see a lot of folks who have a tendency towards, say, calf leg cramps, like a classic Charlie horse. They'll start using internal magnesium or topical magnesium, right, to help with the cramping. And also we'll see people with chronic constipation taking magnesium to move the bowels.
Yep.
And I always thought, how about that?
Yep.
That's interesting. You know, there's even in the Western biomed observation, there's now, of course, the biomeds will not link those together, right? Even though they're using the same,
right,
the same tool to intervene in both of them, but they're not going to link them together. But of course, yet again, the beauty of Chinese medicine is that we did link those things together before. And so the formula that treats both leg cramps also treats constipation, because the root problem, the pattern that's causing the issue, is this deep yin deficiency.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you think about the musculature that's involved in peristaltic action, right, that musculature is cramping as well as the, you know, the calf or the thigh.
Yeah, it's spasmatic.
It's spasmatic, which is why, partially why, the stool isn't coming.
So if someone, okay, you know, we talked about Cheung Chi Tang, Matsu Renwan, maybe they go from Matsu Renwan, excuse me, to Shaio Gansa Tang. Might have just started with Shaio Gansa Tang.
Yeah.
If you had muscle cramps clearly from the beginning, right? But there are other sets of formulas that also have, you know, Jershir in them, or have some kind of, you know, down bearing movement that we also can see commonly deployed for dry style constipation. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, so probably closest to Shaio Gansa Tang is going to be Sinisan. And I would say Sinisan by far is a more common formula for me to start out with for treating dry constipation than any of the ones we've mentioned yet.
Why is that?
Because I think it's a much more common pattern. Sinisan is also a formula that likes modification. So John Zhongjing mentions modifications in the postscript for Sinisan, which he doesn't do for too many formulas. So that's kind of, I take that to be, hey, don't be afraid to throw some other formulas into this one, or throw some other herbs into this one. So Sinisan is Shaio Gansa Tang plus Chai Hu plus Jershir. And we've already talked about Jershir being one of our archetypical dry constipation herbs. So to add that into Shaio Gansa Tang plus then Chai Hu, which, you know, modern Materia Medica classifies Chai Hu as cool, acrid, release the exterior. I think of Chai Hu being bitter and neutral, a la the Shenang Bensao Jing. But the function of Chai Hu is going to be kind of the, no matter how you look at it, it's going to be the opposite, let's say, of the Jershir, which is going to be pushing more down. The Chai Hu is going to be a little lighter and floating upward. So it's just helping the qi dynamic in the opposite way as the Jershir. So you're kind of like moving qi upward, you're moving qi downward, and then you have the core function of the Shaio Gansa Tang, which is doing all the things that we talked about before, right?
So what are you seeing in the patient in the presentation of their symptoms that says, okay, I need to go all the way to Sinisan as the starting point, as opposed to just Shaio Gansa Tang, or frankly, just like with Matsu Renwan? Like, what are the the differentiating factors here in the dry constipation category that are pointing us in one direction or another?
Matsu Renwan is going to have more, let's say, overall. So if we just talk about the abdomens for those three, the Matsu Renwan is going to have more overall bloating, but like the whole abdomen is going to be more distended usually. And you may even feel, actually in any one of those patterns, you may be able to feel the intestines and the hard places where the stool is stuck in the intestines in some cases, particularly the descending colon. So if I see any of that, I'm thinking, well, actually when I see that, honestly, what I'm thinking is Sinisan, but it could be any one of those, right? Matsu Renwan is going to have more of a yang ming feel. So it's going to be a bigger abdomen overall, and the whole abdomen is going to be uncomfortable. And then there's going to be a picture that justifies the formula, if I'm going to go with that. So it's going to be more of a chronic case. There's going to be urinary symptoms. And yeah, that's what's going to make me go there.
Okay.
Shaio Gansa Tang, the thing that's really going to be emphasized, and this is the same with Sinisan actually, is the Rikyu, or the rectus abdominal tension, is going to be very profound. So when you palpate the abdomen, you may have to stop yourself from your jaw dropping. There's a couple,
you know, because of how rigid,
because of how tight it is. You're like, holy crap, that's tight. That's really, really tight. And before you palpate abdomens a lot, you may not like even know that an abdomen could be that tight. That's how tight it can be. And there's a couple of formulas, all that have Shaio Gansa Tang in them, that could present that way. The other one is like the Zhenzhongtang formulas, like Xiao Zhenzhongtang, Dangui Zhenzhongtang. They can also have very, very tight musculature, but they all have Xiaoyou Gansotang in them. So Sinisan can have all of that plus costal stuff. Got so it. Rib side stuff,
which the usual Chaihu indication.
The usual Chaihu indication.
Yeah.
And sometimes with Sinisan too, there's also, it's almost like the rectus, the rectus abdominis is so tight, it almost creates a glomus that you can feel, or a pee that's indistinguishable, but is like clearly there in between the musculature. It's almost like the muscles are so tight, there's a place where it overlaps and conglomerates.
So it's like a little, for lack of a better term, like a bump.
Yes.
Like in the tissue.
Absolutely.
The glomus and
you can see it in these patients. Like even without touching it, you can usually see it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Would also, I mean, we've been talking about this in the context of chronic dry constipation, but
yeah,
you know, some people will have it come and go. Like they'll be constipated for a while and then, you know, then they're fine. And yeah, then they'll be constipated for 4, 5, 6 days and then
exactly
be fine again.
Yeah.
Is that alternating symptomology also Sinisan indicator?
100%.
Classic Chaihu.
Yeah, I think typical IBS patient is a Sinisan patient. Mm-hmm. Like there's such a high corollary with that type, that disease and that formula strategy. Now that may be a Sinisan plus other things.
Right, right. In fact, in many cases it is.
It is, yeah.
But of course, Chaihu is going to be...
But Chaihu is super important. And of course, we have to remember that Xiaoyosan is a modification of Sinisan.
Right.
Right. So the first formula that came was Sinisan, and then it was tweaked to make the Xiaoyosan method eventually. Yeah.
And I would like to point out, since you mentioned Xiaoyosan, because I'm going to do this every time someone mentions Xiaoyosan, so Xiaoyosan is at its core a digestive formula.
Yes.
It's a digestive formula. It's not a stress formula. So help me God, everybody just handing, oh, are you stressed? Have some Xiaoyosan.
Yeah.
Why? Do they have bad poops because of their stress? Maybe.
Yeah.
In that case, it might be appropriate.
Yep.
It's not a stress formula.
Yep.
So stressful to hear Indeed. People just treat it that way, because there are many other formulas much better for treating quote unquote stress.
Yeah.
But also, what is the stress?
Right.
We'll do a whole podcast on that. But just since you mentioned it, Xiaoyosan, digestive formula.
Yeah.
Okay. So in that case, Sinisan, I mean that, you know, we've broken down the pieces here, right? So Matsurenwan, we got dry constipation with urinary symptomology, right? And very yangming in presentation, big abdomen. Straight Xiaoyou Gansotang, we have, frankly, the muscle indicators, right? So like we have heavy rigidity in rectus abdominis, which tracks with this idea of the hypertonicity of the musculature because of the indeficiency. So we're going to straight Xiaoyou Gansotang. But then if we reach for Sinisan, it's because we have many or all of those other symptoms plus Chaihu symptomology. So we have costal sensitivity, we have hypochondriac pain, rib side tenderness, alternating symptomology, etc.
Right.
Okay. But of course, there's one other formula that we need to consider in the Chaihu space that we will see with some regularity in here, which is Da Chaihu Tong.
Yeah.
What's the distinction here? I mean, we kind of rolled over into Sinisan. What's different about Da Chaihu Tong and why would we go there?
Yeah. The Da Chaihu Tong picture is very similar to Sinisan, first of all. It has almost all of the same ingredients at its base. The one difference is in Da Chaihu Tong, and I could make up a reason for this, but I still don't understand why this is the case. Jirgan Cao is taken out for Da Zhao in Da Chaihu Tong. So there's literally no Jirgan Cao in Da Chaihu Tong, and there is Da Zhao.
That's interesting.
Yeah. There's some, you know, I've heard people say, oh, well, it's because of the Jirgan Cao is protecting against the pungent flavor that could aggravate the wood element or encourage the wood element to punish the earth. So it's protecting against that. So if you really want to bump up or emphasize the quality of shengjiang in this case, which is in the formula at a higher dose than normal, you could take out the Jirgan Cao and add Da Zhao. So it's going to sort of bump up the effect or emphasize the effect, take the foot off the pedal, so to speak, of the Shengjiang.
That's interesting. Yeah, because also Dazhao is incredibly sweet.
That's very sweet.
It's very sweet. And even Zhurgansao, which of course is cooked in honey, is certainly much palatably sweeter than Gansao is. Dazhao is still sweeter.
Yes.
Dazhao is such a sweet herb.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, interesting. So what is the indicator for why we would reach for Dazhao Yutang then? What's different?
Dazhao Yutang is going to have Dahong in it at a lower dose.
Mm-hmm.
It's also going to have Bansha and Shengjiang. And Bansha is at a typical dose for Chai Hutong dose. So I use like 12 of Bansha.
Yeah.
But Shengjiang is up to 15. So it's higher rather than like say 9. So the pungent, the acrid warm is a lot more significant in Da Chai Hutong than it is in Sinisan.
Mm.
So it's going to be better for treating things like nausea or upsurge. So if you have a similar picture, Da Chai Hutong, Sinisan, and you're not sure which one to do, both can have the costal tenderness, the ribside tenderness. Both can have alternating bowel patterns, but could be dry, right, in both cases. Both can have recu. Both can have rectus abdominal tension. Both can have that hard epigastric obstruction. All of that can be the same. Da Chai Hutong, if you have nausea, that's one symptom that takes you to Da Chai Hutong right away.
Okay.
Anything where there's stomach upsurge, so if they're hiccuping, nausea, vomiting, any of that kind of stuff, that's when we go to Da Chai Hutong. It's a pretty quick, clear change.
So all the other factors can still be in place, but we add on top of that nausea or upsurge symptomology.
Yeah.
And so we clearly need to descend more.
Yes.
And so that's where we're going to have the Dahuang.
Yep.
The Bansha.
Yep.
It's interesting because, you know, Bansha as an herb, I think of Bansha's descension kind of like the midline of the body from, say, like where your Adam's apple is to your waistline.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
And then Dahuang descends like from your umbilicus to your anus.
Right.
Right. So it's an interesting kind of like just sort of directional location about like where exactly that descension is occurring. And so, of course, that's why we see Bansha, you know, like Bansha Hoputang, things like that, where there's like stuckness in the throat. We need to descend. All of the upbearing sensations, nausea, vomiting, and like every other formula you can think of, Bansha serves that function.
Right.
And then exactly. Dahuang has got that dissension in the actual colon itself. So in this case, again, just like, you know, we started at the top with these Chengxi Tongs where Dahuang is a big player along with Mangshao because we need to really force out strongly. But note that in Da Chai Hutong, Dahuang is there, Bansha is there, but not Mangshao.
Right.
Because we're not trying to like forcibly wet and purge you.
Right. Right.
We're just trying to descend to restore the physiologic process of descension.
Right.
And I think that's a really important distinction to understand, right? Like if we, in many ways, Da Cheng Chi Tang is, it might be a little dramatic to say, but in some ways, it's almost like an emergency formula. Like you're super backed up.
Yep.
You got to get moving, right? Here's the Da Cheng Chi Tang. Let's open you up.
Yep.
Right. In a similar way that we have like with, again, over-the-counter laxatives. You know, if you haven't pooped in 4 or 5 days, someone's going to give you a pretty moving laxative because we got to get you going, you know. If a person had to use Da Cheng Chi Tang regularly because they're constantly getting stopped up, if they did that, let's say kind of like how people use over-the-counter laxatives, I think we'd see a very similar dependency and exhaustion.
Which
would result.
They do in China, right? There's doctors who are surgeons who will say that if you take Dahuang for too long, it will actually change the color of the intestinal wall.
Wow.
You'll be able to track and see, like they'll be able to go in there and see that it's been like stained brownish black.
Yeah. And this again is not to suggest that Dahuang is dangerous or that you shouldn't use
not,
it.
It's not dangerous if it's done
in the right. It's just that like anytime you have to use a formula as a rescue tool, there's clearly something else going on.
Yeah.
So you can't just rely on the rescue tool. And I think this is something that happens with people sort of steeped in a biomed model. Like if you have chronic dry constipation and you're eating enough fiber, your doctor's going to go, well, you know, if you're really stopped up, just take a little smooth move. Like there isn't going to be, there's right. no mechanism for addressing why you are consistently dry constipated. They'll just be like, well, you're right. old and you should eat more fiber.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. This again is why Chinese medicine really sings, is because we actually do have an understanding of this, because we have a much broader and more comprehensive understanding of physical dynamics of human bodies. And so we know what's happening here. You're not right. just old, right? Being right. old has something to do with it, but it's not just like, oh, sorry, you're old. Sure. You're just going to have dry stools now.
Sure. You
know? Okay. So I think that distinction is pretty clear then for the listener in the dry constipation space about when we would make each move right yep. between all of these four formulas that we've discussed. So I guess it's really five. Dachang Qitang as your sort of emergency, you know, again, maybe a slightly dramatic term, but you've been constipated for a while. We need to move things hard.
Yeah.
Relatively short duration of use. And we wouldn't want to use it, you know, every single week forever. So you got to look at what's underlying it. Matsurenwan, which is a mod of Shaocheng Qitang, is going to have dry constipation with some urinary difficulty and a kind of yangming presentation, big abdomen, that kind of stuff, tenderness, etc. We're going to shift into a Xiaoyao Gansao formula when we start to see very tight rectus abdominis, for example. So we've got this musculature piece that's showing the yin deficiency. Maybe we just go straight to Xiaoyao Gansao Tang. Or as you mentioned, maybe it's this follow-up formula to Matsurenwan once right. things have kind of
yep.
moved along.
Or Sinisan.
Or right. even Sinisan.
After yeah, exactly. Sinisan, yeah.
Yeah, because of course, Xiaoyao Gansao Tang is a less complicated Sinisan.
Right.
Because it's in there. 100%. It is. It's always fun to say like a two herb formula as a formula, because I'm like, how many formulas have Gansao and Xiaoyao in them?
Right.
Like, so many.
So but many.
It's a particular ratio of them here, which is also important
right.
to remember. Right. So if you have all of those abdominal symptoms and dry constipation, but you also have Qiayu indicators, alternating symptomology, rib side tenderness, hypochondriac discomfort, etc., Sinisan. It's probably the thing that you're going to be looking at.
Yeah.
And then if you have all of that or some combination of that, particularly again, the Qiayu symptomology, but you also have nausea or other upsurge symptoms, acid reflux, belching, hiccuping, etc., then probably Da Chai Tu Tang is what you need to start with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a good breakdown. All right. Now, of course, the trouble is that we're never so fortunate as to just have just one thing that walks into the clinic. Oh, is it dry? Is it wet?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes
what,
it's
what,
both.
What if it's both? Okay. So we got it both. We got it mixed. Sometimes the bowel movement comes, it's hard and dry. Sometimes the bowel movement comes and it is wet and loose. What do we do now?
Yeah. So you may need a mixed formula. That's the quick answer, is you may need a mixed one. There's some archetypical mixed formulas, and then there's ways we can sort of make our own. If another formula, let's say, is largely fitting, but requires a little extra push on the other end. So we okay. can talk about that.
Okay, so let's take, maybe let's go the archetypical position first.
Yeah. So Shaoxian Tongs, let's talk about those. So Shaoxian Tongs, there is actually six Shaoxian Tongs, but three that are used regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to talk about those three. The other three are, let's say, modifications of Da Huang Huanglian Shaoxian Tong, which is just those two herbs steeped as a tea. So that's mm-hmm. basically just taking bitters.
Yeah.
And that's for a very mild obstruction of the epigastrium. That's a qi layer obstruction. So it's not meant to make you purge, really. Right. It's just moving the qi through the stomach, basically. That's all that is. And it's exactly like taking bitters.
Yeah, for which there is a long-standing tradition in basically every culture on the planet.
Yes.
Of using some kind of bitter concoction to help with digestive upset. I love, actually, this is one of the places where Western herbalism still exists, but in a way that people don't think about herbalism, in like bitter liquors.
Yeah.
Herbal liquors, like, yep. you know, you think of, you know, stuff that gets mixed into fancy cocktails at bars with people with long beards, you know, like that kind of place. Like they're using what we now think of as fancy cocktail liquors that were actually designed as digestive supporters.
Yep.
Because it's one of the ways that you can preserve those bitters for a long time. There's a really common, I mean, you can find it in places called Underberg. It's a German blend of bitters that come in these little tiny bottles that are wrapped in paper. And it's a friend of mine, actually, New Year's Eve this past year, they were like, oh, we had a big meal before we went out for New Year's Eve. They're like, oh, you got to take your Underbergs. And they literally had brought like a sleeve of them with them, like handed them around to everyone. It was just like, take this before we go out because, you know, it's going to be a long night and we got some stuff going on. So there is this longstanding tradition of using bitter flavor to deal with a kind of like congestion in the middle part of the body. So the three Shishintangs, the big players,
are not that.
They're not that. They're much more forceful.
The other three are, just to go over them quickly, San Huang Shishintang, which is the addition of Huang Qin to the previous formula, Da Huang, Huang Li, and Huang Qin. And then Fuzi Shishintang, which is the addition of Fuzi to that. And they're rarely used, right, in the modern clinic. So I don't think it's worth talking about them in any great detail.
Table them for your reference.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the three that we do use, probably starting, I guess, with Bansha Shishintang.
Yeah.
The one that I think probably most people have heard of.
Yeah. Bansha Shishintang is the standard Shishintang. And Bansha Shishintang is also considered a harmonizing formula because it is both an excess and a deficiency formula, a hot formula, and a cold formula. It does all of those at the same time. So it's harmonizing. Bansha Shishintang can be modified in two different ways that are done commonly. And then John Zhongjin calls them different formulas. So one is adding to the dosage of Gansao, which could start at 6 or 9, depending on how you dose your formula. Mm-hmm. And he takes it up to 12. Some people take that up to 15, depending on what they're working with.
So we take the ingredients of Bansha Shishintang, and then we increase the dosage of Gansao to, say, 15.
Right.
And now we have
Gansao Shishintang.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Gansao Shishintang.
Same formula, just different dosage of Gansao.
More Gansao.
Yep.
Okay. So let's start with the standard one, though. So if we're choosing Bansha Shishintang, harmonizing formula, as you said, because it's cold and it's warm. It has this like descending and uplifting quality, right? There's this sort of interesting juxtaposition of opposites that exist inside the formula. Why would we need a formula like that for someone who has a mixed pattern of constipation?
So the pattern of constipation that this is going to be will look like they have a late bowel movement, meaning there's time in between, let's say, they go every other day or every third day. When they go, the first part of it is a hard plug. The second part of it is softer. Mm-hmm. So if they say that, the first thing that I think of is a Shishintang.
Yeah.
Usually Bansha Shishintang.
Yeah.
So that's a good example of a mixed pattern with constipation. Constipation being the time, the frequency of the bowel movement being slow. But then when it comes, the consistency of it is mixed. And this is not separate bowel movements. This is the same movement. The first part of it is like a plug, and then the second part is softer, maybe even loose.
Yeah, could actually be watery.
It could be loose, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And of course, like if someone's having that kind of combined bowel movement, like combined qualities within the same bowel movement,
yeah,
that's why we're picking a formula that has such a broad array of approaches.
Yeah.
Because there is a hot problem and a cold problem.
Yeah.
Right? There's a descending and an uplifting problem. Like there's all of those things are happening.
Yep.
So what would lead us then to modify Bansha Shishintang and reach for any of these other variations? What's different?
So for Gansha Shishintang, which we've mentioned, the key difference is some kind of vexation, agitation symptom, which could be the person is agitated.
Like irritable.
Irritable.
Yeah.
Could also be has a difficult time sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a sleep component to the pattern, I think of Gansao Shishintang. The other thing that could happen is the vexation agitation could present as a skin problem. Mm-hmm. So Gansao Shishintang is actually a fantastic skin formula.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So is that the increase in the Gansao? So we're increasing the sweet component of the formula.
Yep.
By increasing that kind of sweetness, we would therefore moisten a little more, tonify a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that like some of that vexation is a byproduct of probably an underlying deficiency that's playing around. Is that the piece?
It is, yeah. And the way that I was taught to think of it is the sweet flavor is said to moderate fire. Mm. So it's sort of like if the fire is like blazing, you know, it kind of like settles it down a little bit. That's what sweet does right. to fire.
So it doesn't surge as high.
It doesn't surge as high, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. So Banjia Shaxing Tang as standard presentation of this like combined constipation yep. piece. But then if the person has, in addition to the constipation part, some insomnia, some irritability, some kind of mood thing,
yep.
and or a skin layer problem,
yep.
we switch to Gansha Shaxing Tang.
Yep.
Okay. But of course, there's another Shaxing Tang, Shengzheng Shaxing Tang,
yeah.
that we have in here. What's different about that one?
Shengzheng Shaxing Tang is going to be, so let's talk about the modification first. You take Ganjiang from 9 down to 3, mm-hmm. and you add Shengzheng in at 12.
Got it. So we take original Banjia Shaxing Tang,
yep.
drop the Ganjiang, add in Shengzheng.
Yep.
Okay.
And you're like, what? We're trading ginger for ginger?
Yeah.
And yes. And this is a perfect example of using the doctrine of signatures, the Shengzheng having fluid left in it, right? Versus the Ganjiang being completely dry. So the thing that we're targeting in Shengzheng Shaxing Tang is more water or more damp in the intestines. So the presentation here is going to look more like loose stool when the stool comes. It's going to be more loose. Maybe there's occasions where they have loose stool in between the previous presentation that we talked about. But there's also a lot of gurgling. So borborygmus is a textbook symptom of Shaxing Tang patterns in general. If that borborygmus is really pronounced, then I'm thinking more about Shengzheng Shaxing Tang especially. Mm-hmm. And remember, these are just modifications of the same formula. So you can literally give all three quite easily. You know, yeah. like you can just bump the Gansao, put down the Ganjiang, put in Shengzheng, and literally give all three Shaxing Tangs at the same time.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the presentation and that leads us to reaching for the Shengzheng mod is, so it's constipation, the frequency problem is still the same. But when they have the mixed presentations, a little bit hard stool, behind it isn't just soft, but it's like watery and loose.
Watery and loose. And maybe like the next, they have two or three more bowel movements that day that are also loose.
Got it.
Yeah. So that's more common for Shengzheng Shaxing Tang in particular.
Yeah. Because I'm trying to like think for the listener to be like, well, how would I like, because we talked about wet constipation at the front.
Yeah.
Is there a circumstance in which someone who just has the wet constipation presentation could get handed Shengzheng Shaxing Tang?
They could. They certainly could. Yeah, I think it would depend on some other factors. So let's say we're doing abdominal palpation, right? If we look at Shengzheng Shaxing Tang, we're going to want to see some kind of epigastric obstruction. We're going to want to see a water splash sound. And oftentimes in Shaxing Tangs too, the skin temperature will feel different in different places. Mm. It classically feels warmer up at the top of the abdomen yeah. and colder lower. There's actually like palpable heat, cold at the same time. This is one thing that will cue me into the Shaxing Tang picture. So there's other things. Whereas if it's just wet constipation, there may just be a feeling of cold. There may still be water, but the picture may just look more like water, if that makes sense. There may be more right. dizziness. There may be more difficult urination. Urination isn't really a symptom of Shengzheng Shaxing Tang.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But it would be if it was just like cold, wet.
Yeah.
Deficiency mm-hmm. presentation. Yeah. So in this case, I mean, we, you know, the obvious piece is that someone is having the hard plug start with the wet follow up on a constipation frequency. The difference between Banjia Shaxing Tang, Gansha Shaxing Tang, largely here is this additional component of vexation.
Yeah.
Right. Which could also be a skin
yep.
element of vexation. And then Shengzheng Shaxing Tang, of course, is a modification that still has the mixed pattern, but is distinctly more wet.
Yes.
And would have elements in the abdominal exam that continue to indicate a mixed pattern, right? So like,
yep.
as you mentioned, heat in different locations, cold in one area, hot in another, that's mixed.
Yep.
And that's why we know that we're in a mixed pattern
yep.
versus just being in the wet constipation pattern, which is fundamentally a cold
Right.
Fluid dampness pattern.
And a lot more borborygmus for Shishintongs. Yeah. You can have a little bit with the wet patterns, but it's like, again, you might be like, holy crap. If somebody's on your table and you're doing acupuncture and their guts are just, you know,
gurgling
the, yeah, whole time, mm-hmm. think Shishintongs, mm-hmm. and particularly Shengzheng Shishintong.
Well, that's a great spread of formulas that everybody got here. I want to mention before we close out, just, you know, when we're talking about constipation, we've been spending all this time talking about it in an herbal context. But without doubt, if you are talking about constipation, people are going to want to know about fiber, right?
Sure, yeah.
Should I be eating some fiber?
Right, yeah,
It always comes up. So I just wanted to take a little bit of a mention on the idea of fiber. Fiber right now, if you're at all plugged in to the sort of health and wellness world, fiber, in my opinion, is...
Especially if you're plugged up.
There he goes. I think that fiber is likely to be the next macronutrient craze,
yeah, like
protein has been.
Yep.
There's a lot of reasons. It's been burbling for a little while. You know, there's a lot of like glycemic index management, blood glucose stuff, fiber this, fiber that. Fiber's in a lot of places. So, you know, prepare yourself, practitioners, for suddenly being inundated about questions on fiber. The good news is that fiber is actually a macronutrient that we've been studying for a long time in a lot of different contexts biomedically. So when patients come to ask you questions about it, it is actually fairly easy to know what to do about fiber. So a couple of things to just kind of put into your toolkit. So most adults should be consuming somewhere between 28 and 32 grams of fiber in a day, right? So that's total grams of fiber.
Yeah.
Most people who have quote unquote good diets, eat a lot of vegetables, probably come nowhere near that number.
Yeah.
I do a lot of fiber audits for people when I do digestive work and diabetic work and stuff like that. Most people with quote unquote good diets are getting somewhere in the like 14 to 18 range. Yeah,
that right? sounds about right.
Like almost half, really, of where you need to be. And that's because food that we eat is not whole grain anymore.
Yeah.
Right. For most of human history, people got their fiber from whole grains and from beans and legumes. So, you know, unless you have someone who culturally eats a lot of beans, right, they're probably not getting enough fiber. And that's because, like, yeah, there's a lot of fiber in like apples and broccoli and stuff, but like you just can't eat enough broccoli in a day reasonably to get the fiber that you need to get.
Yep.
So that means, of course, that a lot of people just in general throughout their whole lives have not consumed enough fiber. And so then they get to, usually the classic presentation is you have someone who's older. So obviously yin and yang are in decline now as they're older. We usually tend to see a loss of yin substance, particularly in female-bodied people, particularly ones who had children. There was a lot of outgoing jing and blood and yin throughout many years of their lives. And so you'll see this classic sort of hard, dry constipation that presents in women. And so then you'll get this diagnosis of like, oh, you just need to eat more fiber. That's sort of the biomed piece. And the truth is they probably do, you know. What's actually happening in there is that fiber serves an interesting component when it shapes a stool, right? So in the case of a dry presentation, the soluble and insoluble fiber that moves through your digestive tract, the insoluble parts, right, are the parts that your body can't absorb, but they will hold on to water, right? Think of like, I mean, fiber is a pretty good example, like thin threads that are very, very dry, but can plump up and hold water, right? So when people eat fiber, the insoluble components of the fiber go into their digestive tract, and the water that's being pulled out from their stool as part of the natural process of digestion, we know that there's a sluggishness there and a yin deficiency there. And so when their digestive process goes to pull out moisture, there was less moisture to start because they were yin deficient. And now we have a hard, dry stool. We add fiber into the mix, and that fiber is going to hold on to that yin stuff,
yep,
more strongly.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the colon is going to pull out water like it normally does, the fiber is going to hold it and keep the stool wetter.
Yep.
Right. So I did a little combined biomed Chinese medicine explanation there, but basically the fiber that people are consuming when you have a dry presentation is providing an anchor point for moisture in the stool, right?
Makes sense.
On the other side, people have very loose, wet stools, right? And stuff is moving through the bowels very quickly. Fiber is a little bit trickier in that scenario because What we usually find biomedically when people have a wet, deficient, damp, cold presentation is that there is an insufficiency of a lot of what the biomeds are calling gut microbiome, gut microbes, right? That are able to manage a lot of the digestive things that need to happen in a healthy gut. So you have this real tension with fiber with people who have like a wet presentation because they actually do need to eat more fiber. But if they suddenly rapidly increase their fiber intake, right? All of those little fibers holding onto moisture in the gut, of which there is currently too much, is going to make that bowel even slicker and even more rapid.
Yeah.
And will actually result in a lot of gas and bloating and gurgling and all kinds of weird things because now what should be providing bulk and substance to the stool is actually facilitating way too much moisture at once. So in dry people, dry stool people, you can pretty much just be like, yep, go ahead and take some Metamucil, eat some prunes. You can rapidly increase your fiber. It's not going to cause a huge issue. In wet presentation deficiency cold people, you got to slowly increase the fiber. So what you do is you do a food journal with someone and you take a look at what they're eating, do what I call a fiber audit, where I literally am just calculating how much fiber I think they're getting in a day. If you don't know anything about that, you can literally just Google what people eat and see how much fiber is in it. And then let's say they're coming in at what I usually see, 14, 16 grams. We want to get them to 28. You're not going to get them to 28 grams for probably 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, right? It's got to be real slow.
Real slow. So we're going to say, okay, you're doing 16 grams like on the reg. I want you to start doing 20. And we're going to do 20 for 2 or 3 weeks until everything feels good at 20. There's no issues. And then we're going to go to 24 or 25, right? And when I say increasing like that, what do I mean? You're going to have to give people some advice. Usually I have folks add more beans into their diet, not like big bowls of beans, like, oh, here, eat some beans. They'll feel terrible. Everyone knows how gassy you can get if you just eat lots of beans. But like you made a soup, throw a can of beans in there. You know what I mean? Right. Make a chili, throw some beans in there. You want to have a little side of lentils that goes with your chicken or whatever. Like you're just trying to slowly add that stuff in. And you can also, of course, do it with supplementation. So you can just use Benefiber, you can use Metamucil, you can use Metamucil crackers. Like if someone doesn't want to modify their diet, but they want to get the fiber in, you can do it that way. It's always better if it comes from food, in my opinion, but whatever, we work with what we got, you know? And then as you slowly increase that person's fiber intake, the stool will actually shape better. It'll start to have more structure to it because you're building a whole new relationship between the moving parts inside someone's gut. And so you'll end up with a better stool in the long run. So everybody needs fiber. The wet people need fiber. The dry people need fiber. But the way that it's approached needs to be a little bit different because their constitutions are different. And the rate at which you increase the fiber is also a big deal. And as I said, you know, if you're not tracking the wonderful world of fiber, get in there, read a little bit about it, right? Just, I mean, you can literally, honestly, these days you could probably ChatGPT it and it would be halfway decent. But like, you know, start reading a little bit about the research in fiber, go over to NIH studies, take a look at PubMed, see what people have been talking about with fiber relative to digestion and also to blood sugar management, things like that. I think it's something that we're all going to want to be a little bit more conversational about going forward because patients are going to have questions for us about it. And it's always nice if we have at least, you know, some passing idea of what's going on there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's our long discussion about constipation. So thanks to Trish again for sending us the question. We really appreciate that. And hopefully this has been helpful in giving all of you a little bit of idea about the various ways to deal with constipation. As always, you know, this episode being a perfect example, we love questions from the audience. So if you guys have something you're wondering about and you'd like to listen to or hear us talk about, please send it over to info@rootandbranchpdx.com. That's info@rootandbranchpapadeltaxray.com. And we'd love to get your questions and make some more episodes about it. So until we talk to you next time, I'm Travis Curran.
And I'm Travis Cunningham.